Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 43. Step right up, step right up. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and you can find us on Twitter with the handle at Portal Gaming 60. Welcome, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me, once again, after a couple episodes, is
your co-host, Brian.
All right, Brian is back. This episode, we are entitling, What If He Doesn't Survive? He's Worth a Lot to Me. We're going to be talking about Kickstarter games and what Kickstarter means to people and what Kickstarter means to a store and those kind of things. Also, kind of a first, although I guess we did this Arkwright, but we're going to do a full review of a game. We're going to do a full review for Concordia and talk about that. So that's what we've got in this episode. Welcome back, Brian. I think the last episode you were on was like 40.
Yeah. No, it's been a little while. I guess that makes the title even a little more strange.
Oh, yeah.
That's not relating to me at all.
No, the title's not related to you, but it's good. Good to have you back. This weekly format. It's crazy. I get to have all these other people on and everything. Yeah. So, which is good. But I miss you, buddy. So it's good to be back in the seat again. Hey, I want to make sure I mention that Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. So, move on. Let's do some upcoming events.
Yeah. So I guess the one that is really high on our minds, like International Tabletop Day. It's another, like, it's happening again this year. So April 29th, all day, from midnight to midnight, we're going to be running events at the Portal. So, you know, stop by. We'll have some promos and some, you know, giveaways and that sort of stuff. And then a lot of people are going to be doing, like, demos of games and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, just keep your eyes open. If there are any announcements, we'll be sure to let you guys know on, like, the Facebook page or, you know, some of those avenues. So we'll definitely be looking to really promote it and get people invested and try to, like, you know, just showcase all the games that have been coming out and, you know, just the community at a whole. So
yeah, and if there's anything that you've been wanting to play and you're going to be there, you know, feel free to send me an email, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com or Twitter or whatever. Catch up with me and let me know if there's something that you've been looking to play. I'll definitely be willing to teach. I'm usually pretty wide awake there. I do my little trick where I sleep beforehand.
Yeah.
So I usually keep going pretty far. I do have to disappear in the afternoon to go to something else. Probably not the best day if you're saying, like, hey, I want to play Axis and Allies for 7 hours. It's a little better to stick to games that are, you know, 3 hours and under on a day like that, jumping from one game to the next and just with people coming in the store and whatnot. But, yeah, if there's anything people have been trying to play, let me know. And definitely that's a great day because there's lots of people around.
Yeah, there's definitely been growth in there, too. You know, it's like, when it first started, I remember it was very light for the people that were sticking around and playing consistently. So Right. It's really been, it's been nice to see people come in and just that community kind of forms, and it's really been growing every year. So we're excited for it. We're looking forward to just, you know, meeting some people and trying to get some games to the table too.
Nice. And then Silk City Board Game Group, I feel like I've been advertising this one a whole bunch, which is great.
Yeah.
But coming up on this Saturday, April 1st from 12 to 4:30 at the Manchester Library. Ohm, I think she's switching in Terraforming Mars there, and several other exciting games.
Yeah, Glucks. New York Slice and Glucks.
There you go. So those four will be featured. So definitely, it's a great time. It's really fun. So coming out to that. That is our upcoming events. Let's go to What's on Your Table. I think 2 weeks ago, we got to play Fields of Green. Mm-hmm. From Artipia Games. So this was a Kickstarter game, so I thought that was apropos.
Oh, darn it. That's what we were doing? I got to revise my list.
Nah, just games we've been playing. And so Fields of Green is a re-implementation of... Oh, no. Why is it leaving me? What is it?
Among the Stars.
Thank you. You don't have to whisper it.
I wasn't sure. I was going to say Forbidden Stars.
Forbidden Stars. Re-implementation of Forbidden Stars with drafting.
With farming.
Among the Stars. So there's a card drafting game. You're setting up a farm and trying to score points by having the best darn little farm you can. and that's it. So it takes place over 4 rounds. You draw 6 cards. You get to choose from 4 different piles. You've got fields. You've got animals, you've got structures, and you've got buildings, and those are different from each other. Structures and buildings are different. So structures are barns and silos, and buildings are...
everything else.
Everything bigger than that. I don't know exactly. So you draft a card, then you play it. It has a cost, money, sometimes food, sometimes water. You go through all the cards, drafting 6 cards in a round, passing, pass left, pass right. And you play them out on your tableau in front of you. And then at the end of the round, you have to like feed the animals with food you save in your silos, and you have to water. There's like a distance mechanic on it. So your water towers can only water fields that are so far away, and then you get to harvest new items and score points and just kind of your classic drafting engine build style game. Very solitaire. That was probably the biggest drawback to me on the game was you're not at all looking at other people's farms. It doesn't really matter. Maybe every so often, because you could draft a card to like pitch it for right. money.
And when you don't care about your hand, you'll check to see and make sure you're not giving your neighbor points.
Yeah, but... right, exactly. So if there was nothing great for you to play, you would do that. But otherwise, I'd say even less so than Seven Wonders, where when you start to learn it, you start to realize, oh, I really want to use this, or I guess in Seven Wonders you're even like, ooh, I need to build my wonder, so I have to use a card for that. This game doesn't guarantee you're going to use cards outside of...
Well, and that's Seven Wonders is also using like direct, like comparison, like it's like...
Right,
military. You know, this one, I didn't see anything. I don't know if it was like, you know, I don't know if there was anything in that sense of like, oh, if you have the most apple orchard, or like, you know, yeah. Like, so I don't think there was something like that. Not that I saw, at least. So it just seems like even they just didn't build something in that would make you try to get a majority in something over the other.
Mm.
And I think the way the way it was kind of structured, you kind of build your originating hand right from these four different decks.
Yeah,
it just felt a little strange to me. It's kind of like it does. They gave you kind of this ramp up, so it's like you'll start the game picking more farm cards or something like that, and it kind of works toward you taking more building cards towards the end of the game, because those give you like victory points and such.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really like, it doesn't ramp. You can still see like the same card, you know, like from either on your first round or your last round, depending on what you took. So it's a little strange to me.
Seven Wonders has the different age decks and whatnot.
Yeah, like I wanted a little bit more of this, like, oh, this round feels unique, not... It was unique because we were told to pick cards from specific piles, but it didn't really change much for the dynamics of it.
Yeah, no, it's true. So, so it was better than meh to me. It's interesting. I like building the engine, but I've had 2 plays of it now, and they just kind of both felt the same. So it's got that sameness, like you said, because there's nothing like, ooh, I drew this time, or ooh, I think I could go for this, you know, this system this time, whereas... Yeah, even Seven Wonders, where it sets up the deck, allows you to kind of be like, ooh, maybe I'll try this with this number of players or whatever. So
does it work 2-player? Like, is there a 2-player?
So 2-player, you both draw 6 cards, and then you lay the 12 cards out in front.
Oh, yeah, I think you told me that.
And then you draft from that pool, which is just a little arbitrary, I suppose. It just gives you more options.
Have you tried it that way? Or...
No, I haven't played 2-player. I think I've played a 3 and a 4-player game, so...
Okay.
But it was good. It was fun. If somebody said, hey, play this, I would play it, but... It just didn't, like those elements you said, there wasn't a lot of interaction, and missing that, like, ramp up of cards, like, if it kind of said, oh, you get these, and then you get these, and then you get those, you know, or kind of just kind of told you, well, take the buildings at the end, because they score points, so you'll be able to see what you have in terms of all that, so. Fields of Green are Tipia games.
All right, so leading into the Silk City Board Game Group, I've been playing New York Slice from Bezier Games a few times.
Solo?
No. I don't think there's a solo variant, but... no, this is a really great... Like, it's a neat game. Its production value is amazing. Like, it's a box. It's kind of like a pizza box, you know, so it has a hinge, so it opens, you know, up like that, which is neat. You open it up, and you've got, like, all these different slices of pizza that you punch out, and they've got different toppings on them. And, you know, like, a veggie pizza will have... like 3 points because there are 3 tiles of veggie pizza. So each of them has a 3 on it, you know, so it's kind of going up like that. And there would be like 4 tiles of the next one that has a value of 4 on it. But basically, you know, you've got all these different types with point values ranging from like 3 to 10 or so, 10 or 11, I think. So it's, you punch them out and you shuffle them up and put them face down into stacks of 11, I believe. And then it'll go around. Each person will have a chance to kind of to build, create their own pizza. They just take the tiles off the top of their stack and put them out in a circle, just in the order that they come out.
Oh, okay.
And there's also like a specialty for the day. So you kind of, each person has like a unique thing there. So like you'll have like a special menu tile sort of thing. But basically you're just, you have a turn, you split up your pizza, you cut it into different slices. So there's one available for each person. And then it goes around the next person in turn order. Like the person to your left gets the first pick of all the pieces that, and then it'll go around till everyone has taken one up until you get the last pick. So whatever's left over, you get that. So you're trying to divide it so you'll get something that's decent at the very end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you'll go ahead and do that till everyone's had at least one turn. Sometimes, like depending on the player count, people have multiple turns. But you'll do that until everyone's collected whatever they've had. You know, and there's some ways to eat slices of pizza over the course of the game, but that's not a huge deal. That'll get you points as like an immediate thing. But at the very end of the game, you're really just checking majorities. So if you have the most, we'll go back to veggie at the 3-point value. If you have the most 3 slices, like point value 3 slices, the veggie slices, if you have the most of those, you get 3 points. If you're tied with someone else for majority, no one gets any points. So it's really kind of this balancing act of like trying to get the most, but not, you know, not tie someone or leave yourself open to that. So it's really just doing that. You'll get majorities based on each different type of pizza. Every piece of pepperoni that you've eaten gets you a point as well. So those ones don't count for majorities, but you can get that immediate benefit. So if you're not going to be winning the, like, you know, the cheese pizza with all the pepperonis on it, you'll get points, but you're not going to get the, like, 10 points from getting majorities on that. And like I was saying, there's special tiles each round. So one might give you opportunities to eat, like, all your anchovy pieces, which normally those would be negative points, but you know, you're going to have opportunities to kind of work with those. And I don't know, it's really like it's pretty light, but it's a neat sort of drafting style game. And the production is amazing too. Like the, each tile is like a very thick piece of cardboard, and it really feels like you're like, you know, building this pizza and trying to slice it up and such. But just be forewarned, I mean, if you're hungry going into this, it's a problem. But I don't know. I found it really enjoyable. So
be thick cardboard, but thin crust pizza.
Yes.
So did this give you memories of sitting in that pizza shop in New York City when we were by Penn Station eating? A month ago when we were at New York Toy Fair? Sitting in there.
We didn't make the pizza there.
Remember the Usher play? All right. Bezier games.
New York slice.
Awesome. So I will... we got the chance to play 1846 from GMT Games. So never played an 18XX game in my life. You have not. The people we played with had never played an 18XX game. So yes, it's a train game. 1846 is a train game, but Ticket to Ride doesn't count, and Railways of the World is moving towards that. Haven't even played Age of Steam. So this is this whole series of 18XX games, which I assume people either know about or they know nothing about. So 18XX is like, it's like all these games that take place wherever trains were being created, invented, and built across anywhere. So they all have different years. 1846, 1889, 1830, 1817. And then they even have like 18 Cleveland. 18 CZ is on Kickstarter right now. 18 China, whatever it is. I think we were talking about Iron Dragon, which was a train game that I don't know about that one as much. But anyway, so they're all like stock market, tile placing, route building games of a heavy nature. And so it's kind of supposed to be once you've played an 18XX, like once you played one, you're kind of able to play them all. They follow similar rules with slight to, you know, medium variants on each other. So 1846 is from GMT Games and Tom Lehman. And it's supposed to be like an intro 18XX game. You know, it's definitely a heavy game. So we got a chance to sit down and play this, and I had gone through a whole play on my basement floor by myself and made sure to try to get down rules and everything. So basically what happens in a round is there's a stock round where players can buy and sell stock in different companies. So in our four-player game, there were six companies available. And the map is like the North Midwest, I guess. I mean, it's very, very limited. It's like Ohio and Indiana and Illinois, pretty much. That area, right? It was basically, it went out to Chicago, and it went over to, like, Cleveland, and a little bit beyond Cleveland.
Was, like, New York off the board?
New York Railway was there, but New York was off the board.
So that was on one edge.
Yeah,
off and Pennsylvania the board. And, like, St. Louis was the opposite, like, bottom corner.
Yep.
Kind of not, like, there in some sense, but not really there.
Yeah, so really honed in on, like, those three states for the most part. And so, anyway, there's a stock round where you can buy or sell stock. In the beginning, you're basically just buying stock to open companies. And then there's two operating rounds. So in an operating round, each company gets a chance to lay up to two track, run their trains, get money, and pay out to their stockholders, and then buy new trains with the income that they've had. Now, in the game, it's important that you recognize that, like, a train company has money, and then a player, as the president of the company holding stock in other companies, has money. So you have to keep those separate. And so that's basically what happens. You do two of those operating rounds, and then the stocks go up and down. I'm not going to explain how all that happens, because that's part of it. But that's the basic idea. So that's how a round goes, and then you kind of keep doing those until you break the bank, a la Food Chain Magnate and a lot of these other games, which originated with these. I don't want Food Chain took it from 18XX, so realize that. But that might be something people are familiar with. Or until all players have gone bankrupt except one. And so you keep playing. So we learned it in like a half hour. It wasn't too long.
Right, with some nitpicky stuff that was not...
Yeah.
Like, we still figured stuff out as it went along, but...
We were all willing to just jump in and make mistakes if we make mistakes, so we were okay with that. More than rules mistakes, though, I mean, I'm sure we might have made some. It seems like knowing the game is so important. It's like one of these games you have to play over and over. Like, you can't...
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that's the point of it. It's not intended to be a one-off play, like, hey, come demo this game, check it out. Okay, see ya. Like,
right, I mean, because of the
genre,
the breadth of the line of the 18XX games, you really have to know what you're looking to do and kind of what you need to have everyone on at least a similar level of, you know, understanding to make it look to feel like a competitive game in any sense of the word, you know.
Yeah. So I want to give thanks to Edward from Heavy Cardboard and to Joe Wiggins from Deep End Podcast, because I was on Twitter with them getting ready and they gave me lots of tips. They were willing to share all sorts of things with me for teaching and everything, so I felt pretty confident, even though once we got into it, then those little things come up. But our game didn't go so well. So we managed to complete the first round, and then do the stock round in the second round, and the first operating round, we had two players go bankrupt. And when you go bankrupt, you're out of the game. So that left two, and after 2 hours, we were not going to... Mm-hmm. Have those two players keep playing just to see who won on our first game. So we called it there. We did later find out, we think that Larry would have been able to stay in with limited funds and
whatnot. Well, he could, right?
But he
would have been...
It was just, you know, at that point, it was, you know, we had been playing for 2 hours. And not that that's super long, because these games sometimes go 4 and 5, but it was just one of those points where it was like, well...
Yeah.
So we certainly made some mistakes. Things, you know... Players took chances, and like Larry said, that he didn't quite understand. So both you and Eric opened up two railroad companies, which is fine. I think it's like risky, but you should be able to do it. It's not something that you shouldn't be able to do. And then Larry had bought three trains for his one company, not realizing like those go. What happens is the trains rust, so they leave play after a certain amount of time, and it was very quick in our game because we pushed that game really fast. in terms of that, which is good because the more trains you own, the more money your company can get, but the faster the game moves. I'm not going to get into explaining all those mechanisms, but just know that kind of speeds up the game. So we just seem to push the tempo so fast that people couldn't keep up with it in terms of producing. Also, you can sell your issue shares, and those go in there, but then people weren't buying them, so that was kind of lowering stock and, you know, maybe kind of playing suboptimally there. We're not sure, so we definitely
want to give it another try. The stock doesn't matter that much.
Yeah, that shouldn't matter in terms of anything.
That's really just the very end of the game, right?
Being able to collect on those or other players to collect to have money to put in and to purchase other stocks and whatnot. So it was interesting. It was fun. We all wanted to try it again. I mean, we diagnosed the game for 30 minutes afterwards as we were cleaning up. So I think it was a bad game on our part, but it didn't leave a bad taste in our mouth. We all were just like, oh, great, I know what I'll do next time. I'm going to try that. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
But I think that next play is kind of hinging on, like, I don't know. I guess my enjoyment of it would definitely be hinging on that next play. Like, as far as how much I'm looking to invest in playing something like this.
Gotcha.
You know, and not to say that it's a slight on it at all. It's just, you know, if you start going down this path, like, it's just, it seems like it's a pretty big investment, you know. Maybe
time
not
investment.
As much. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
A pretty big time investment for something, and it would be fine, like, it would be great if that was what, you know, I was looking to do, but it's kind of in a similar sense, I think, to, you know, we were talking about, like, campaign-style games, and it seems like there's just so many, there's so many other options, it's tough to really focus and look at one type, but.
Well, I mean, I definitely liked it. It's definitely, the player interaction is awesome. Like, just those things. Now, we did talk about how you kind of get sectioned off into one part of the board. Mm. And so we have to, you know, figure out some more of that as we play. But definitely with all that, you know, you're buying and selling stocks and shares, and you can buy from each other and all that kind of stuff. So that, I thought that was really good in terms of that. The math is slightly intense. You know, it's basic arithmetic, but at, you know, at a high level. So you're just doing a lot to try to figure out all those things, but overall I thought it was fun. It was good to get into that. I do know what you're saying. Like, is 1846, am I going to, you know, love this game? And thus here we go down the road. We're going to be playing one train game a week, one 18XX a week. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, even if you're looking at something like chess or something where it's like, it's a different style of game when you are at a high level of something like that, where it's like you can see a move and the implications that that move has, you know, down the road in that play or something. Like, you know, even something like I know Race for the Galaxy was like that for a while. It's like you need to get to a certain point where you're saturated with it, and then you can play based on your understanding of what is actually good and what is bad. You know, like, you need to get to that, I think, to really have that, like, that, you know, that moment click where it just comes together. But I'm not saying, like, it was enjoyable. I guess there are a lot of other ones that kind of have a similar feel to me. You know, even if we're talking like Food Chain Magnate or Antiquity or something like that, like, they kind of had similar sort of feels to me where it was like, this is enjoyable. I'm just not sure if I'm going to get to that saturation level, but I'm definitely willing to try it again, you know?
Yeah, it didn't pull me in like the first play of Arkwright.
Mm-hmm.
Arkwright was heavy, and you kind of go, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. Oh, I see what's supposed to happen here. You kind of learn it as you go, and it makes sense. This was like, okay, I see where I messed up, and now I have to go back to the beginning again, you know, after that time. So I can see that, whereas Arkwright was just like, I got this. And then the next player, oh, okay, you know, and you're bringing new people in as long as they're willing to soak up the heaviness of the game.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of goes and it rolls. So there's that. That is 1846 GMT Games.
So another game, I guess, that's coming up for Silk City Board Game Group. I guess I've been playing a lot of those recently.
Yeah.
But I've been playing a ton of Terraforming Mars recently from Stronghold Games. And I feel like we've talked about that enough where, you know, I don't need to get into the ins and outs of it, but I've just been playing, like, I haven't had a ton of free time away from the house, so I've been playing a ton of this solo, and I just wanted to touch on that, let people know, like, you know, I've just been having a great time with this as a solo game, and I haven't really played many games solo, I mean, maybe Lord of the Rings a little bit, the living card game. Mm-hmm. But really, this has been like that, just a really neat puzzle. I've really just been enjoying it. It kind of has that like build up in a similar sense to like a Race for the Galaxy, a Rule for the Galaxy to me, where it's like you're really trying to like build upon your own engine and get something going based on what you've previously done. You know, and the replayability is neat too, because you've got like so many cards in the deck, and each company has a different take on what you're trying to do. So I wanted people to know that I've just been really enjoying that. I know you had told me about it as a solo game specifically, and you really recommended it. I was kind of hesitant to start, but yeah. I know even recently, like, Rachel had a play that she was helping put together. So she would basically come home to me. I'd put my son to sleep, and I'd be there like, you know, hold on. I just need to figure out. I placed an ocean tile, so I need to get two of this resource and two of that. And I also have this card that does this, so I need to just let me finish this iteration of what's going on. So I guess, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to some of the new maps that will be coming out. And, you know, just I'm glad that Stronghold Games has really been, you know, supporting Terraforming Mars. And they're really trying to keep content coming from him, it seems. So I'm excited. So,
yeah, no, it's great, Soul. And it's fun when things like that. I find sometimes, like, the most exciting thing is to discover a game that's super fun solo, or when a game is two-player fun, like a Mombasa that's super fun two-player, or like I love Madeira, like those heavy games that just seem like they need three or four, but they work with two, or a game like this, an engine builder, which is awesome, that works with one, you know, that's super exciting. So
I guess the difference with that, with Terraforming Mars solo, you basically have 14 eras to do everything yourself.
Yeah.
So if you have accomplished, you know, putting all the ocean tiles out and getting the oxygen level all the way up and getting the heat all the way up, if you've accomplished all those by the end of the 14th era, then you're good. You can score points as normal, minus the rewards and basically those objectives that are mostly for multiplayer. So you can do it minus that. If you haven't done all three of those things to Terraform Mars, you just lose.
Right.
So, I don't know. It really ramps up. You start and it feels like you don't have any sort of chance at success. And then, you know, maybe like halfway through the game, you're like, okay, I'm starting to turn the corner, but I've already wasted half of the game. How do I get to here from here? You know? So it's just, I've really been liking it. And there's a strong community for the solo plays too. You were telling me like there are all these different updated high scores, and it sounds like
there's
the designer,
like a monthly challenge on BoardGameGeek.
Yeah. I haven't seen, I need to look that up, but is that just like the highest score of each faction or each corporation, I guess?
Yeah. They put different things out every month though, like stipulations and what corporation everybody could play this month. And I mean, it's the designers themselves doing it. So, No, it's great. That actually, when you were saying, like, hold on, I have to wait. This is the only time I've ever, you know, my wife's like, oh, could you please do the dishes? And I'm just like, no. I can't. I'm right in the middle of this with three rounds to go, and I've got my engine. Like, I can't. No, I'm not going to do that.
And it's totally, like, fiddly enough where it's like, you know, if you miss one, like, it's like you have to get your pattern down of how you iterate, like how you take your turns.
Yeah.
Because if you change that order even slightly, or at least for me, like I know if I do one thing out of order, now it messes everything up and I might not be playing I might be breaking some rules here and there, or doing actions twice when I shouldn't be able to. I know the toughest thing for me was even just like getting in the habit of producing at the very end of the round, then immediately moving up that round track and drawing cards, you know, because it's like, it's very specific as to when you do those things. I'm always like in the vein to like move up the era and then produce, but that's not right.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I also don't care if I lose. Like, it stinks because you feel like, oh, I couldn't draw the card. You have all these things to complain on, like, blame it on, but whatever. Like,
yeah,
it's fine because it still ramps up. You still get close, you know, so it's fun. Right. I think I've only had once where it was like I just couldn't get any heat up at all.
Yeah.
So I was just stuck way down at, like, negative 22 when the game ended, and it was like I didn't know what to do.
Right, and no, I know with this one, like, there are some flaws to it. You know, like, there could be a game where you pick a corporation thinking, okay, you know, I just need to get a couple of these things, like a couple cards focused on this, and it might not be anywhere near what you end up getting, you know, or, you know, so it's really more in the, like, luck of the draw in some ways. Obviously, like, you mitigate it as best you can, and there are ways to kind of work around, and maybe you have to change up your tactics and strategy for it, like, you know, and that's just going to be the case with any sort of, any deck of cards. It's going to be, there's going to be variety and some variation that you can't account for, but it's really fun, and there are ways to really try to focus on, you know, delving deeper into that. Like, it feels like most of the time I'm not getting even halfway through the deck, you know, and sometimes, like, you need specific cards to actually get something going, like, you know, and sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't, but I think the enjoyment is trying to, like, to build up that engine so you don't have to worry about drawing that one card in that last round.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely.
So.
Cool. All right. Terraforming Mars, Stronghold Games. People have heard of it. It's an amazing game. My favorite game of 2016, in fact. So just quickly, I wanted to mention a little Kickstarter game that came out called Gloomhaven. And so I've managed to acquire a copy of this. This is from Cephalofair Games. And it's hit it pretty big. So Gloomhaven is this giant box, 21 pounds of game, if you've listened to Blue Peg, Pink Peg, and other places where they've announced that. But specifically, they had the contest to win one. And so it's this big, sprawling, massive campaign, dungeon crawl game with all these characters and, you know, it likens itself to be a legacy game where there's things you can't open unless you unlock certain things and whatnot. So I'm not going to do a, like, review here, but I got a chance to play this. I'm going to do a full review with my wife because she's the one who's been playing with me. Brian has not played it. And so, you know, she said she would do a section, a segment reviewing this game when we get, like, 5 or 6 plays. So we've played 2 under our belt. It's really good. Nobody's lying. Like, when they say this game is really good. It is a commitment, which I think is why playing with, you know, my spouse in my house with ne'er a mouse to be seen is...
That's probably... I've been reading a lot of Green Eggs and Ham of late, so...
And I think that makes sense. You need to have a dedicated group if you play this. If you go find 3 of your buddies and, like, hey, we're going to play a 4-player game, and you take a Saturday night and you play 2, and then they're like, hey, I'm going to be out of town for a week, but maybe in 2 weeks we could get... You're going to go play solo. Like, in those 2 weeks, you're just going to be like, screw you guys. I'm going to keep playing, and then you come back, you can jump back in. But it definitely will do that. So, like, I think you could come over and jump in with us and it would be fine, which is cool because legacy games don't allow for that. Mm-hmm. Campaign games, it's okay, but it's not as fun. But I think this game would allow for that. It wouldn't be that frustrating. You could just grab a character and jump in with us, and we can just adjust the difficulty to whatever characters are in there. So it's not like you're going to walk in and just get pummeled. But... Yeah, I mean, the big thing that this whole game boils down to is you've got all these specific classes, and there's 6 that you start with, and there's 11 packages you can't open, which are all presumably classes, unless, you know, he hid something else in there. And it's this card play. So it's this... I don't know if I call it Euro style, but it's all definite. You know, it's defined combat. So... you know what's going to happen, and then you just kind of, well, I guess not, because you draw a card. So it's got that piece to decide, so it's not. But it's all these cards, and you get to play, and you get to decide what 2 cards do I want to play this turn, and every single one is a different ability. It's not like, oh, this one's attack 2, and this one's attack 3, and this one's attack 4, but, like, they have all these different abilities, and push, and move, and this, and cast a spell, and all this crazy stuff, and it's really interesting. So I just wanted to mention that I got a chance to play it. It's great. It's not available, but we'll be doing a full review of it. And since we're talking about Kickstarter, I think it's apropos that I talk about the hottest Kickstarter out right now. So
yeah,
that is that. Gloomhaven, Cephalofair Games, and Larry had said, I don't think Brian will like it, and I think I disagree. I think you would like it, but the overwhelmingness of that campaign and that whole box, I think, is something, with, like you said, with a time commitment, would just be tricky, but we got to get you to play with it. So, that is Gloomhaven, Cephalofair Games. That's what's on our table. Tell us what's on yours. All right. So our discussion topic today is Kickstarter. And so I will just kickstart us off here with the... title of the episode, which is What If He Doesn't Survive? He's Worth a Lot to Me. And so I think this is one of the things on Kickstarter that's interesting, is people put their money forward to buy these games, and then projects can go under, money can disappear, and that can be, you know, that could be a big deal. Or, very simply, I think of this title as, you know, the person who's put all this time and effort into the game, and if it doesn't get back, the project just kind of dies out because they're basically self-publishing the game at that point. Now, there are large publishers that are on Kickstarter as well. CMON probably being the biggest of them, you know, that put them up there, and I don't know what they're kickstarting other than they've just discovered a formula that people will just run after. You know, Rising Sun is up there now, and I don't even know how many millions of dollars is that. It's probably over 3 million. I have not checked. But it's, you know, crazy amounts of money that people are putting out there. So, so we both work for a retail store, and Kickstarter is somewhat separate from that because this is an opportunity for people to put their money and just kind of get the game directly. But we both have kickstarted games, so it's not like we're saying, oh, here's this evil, vile thing that is against stores and all that, in terms of that, but we both have done Kickstarter, and, you know, it's neat to be able to get a game or to be able to talk about it. I know for me, the first game I kickstarted was Bottom of the Ninth, and I was all excited because I got this game for my dad, who's a huge baseball fan, and I was able to see it and show him some of the cards, and, oh, this is what you're going to get, and this is really neat, and so you kind of, like, build that hype, which was fun, you know, to know that game was coming, and, you know, could I do the same thing with retail and all that? Yeah, absolutely, but it was fun to kind of be behind the project and see behind the scenes, so there was that element. And you've kickstarted some games.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little while. I guess the tough thing, like, there are a lot of times, like some of the companies that are up there, you're not exactly sure what the process is going to be to get them at a retail level. Obviously, like, we could order stuff at some point, but it's not, you know, stuff is never guaranteed. There's always going to be production issues here or there, or shipping issues here or there. So it's always going to be kind of up in the air based on what we are able to get in. You know, and sometimes there are promotions where it's like, it's promising something that's, you know, unrealistic to even have at a retail level. Like, I think even Gloomhaven was relatively inexpensive, right? Like, something like that was going on Kickstarter at lower than what we would be able to offer it at for MSRP. You know, and there are always going to be pricing breaks for, like, different levels or, you know, some early bird sort of specials and whatnot. But, I don't know, I guess part of the excitement, it's like, those Kickstarter exclusives are probably some of the larger things too, where it's like, I want to make sure that I'm getting the, and it's totally that completionist sort of theory with that. But, you know, it's a tough thing to avoid if you're looking to get the full play, even if it's like, even if the game is perfectly fine without, you know, that extra promo tile, it's just kind of getting into that mindset of, you know, you've got enough games. You don't need to worry about X, Y, and Z when you can play it with the base game in there. So, I don't know. I guess it's totally one of those things where I'm ready. Like, I would be ready to, like, complain about it all day and night, like, for those, you know, exclusives that, you know, the retail, like, we can't get those always. Like, sometimes we can. Obviously, like, some companies are easier to work with than others, but, you know, by and large, we're not actively seeking out all those extra Kickstarter exclusives to come into the store so people can buy them there. It's just, but I'm not going to complain about it because, you know, it's not going to accomplish anything. it's totally, because like people could say how much they hate that practice, and then as soon as they see it, they're going to go on Kickstarter and back something that has it. Because it's like, you know, I'll complain about it up until I need to take action, and then, I'm going to gripe about it, but I'm still going to do it. So, I don't know. I guess it's been good to see companies, like I was saying, like work a little bit more closely with retailers, and I think even like the like different organized play thing, like the companies are coming out with better organized play practices, and even kind of opening stuff up to that back and forth, like retailers could reach out and try to seek something out. But you know, anything that's up on Kickstarter too is still that unproven. The excitement is that like unknown of the game a lot of times. So even when you're backing something and you're really excited about what it could do, I guess a lot of it, you could even focus on what you've got in front of you. So that's just, I don't know. I guess I'm rambling at this point.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things to me when I think about retail stores and Kickstarter that is strange is, so the typical game is not on Kickstarter, is not making $3 million, right?
Right.
So that is your Rising Sun with your exclusive figures. And that is just always going to exist because it's making $3 million. So you just, you know, you step aside, you just say, okay, the handful of people that don't get it from there that then see the hype, you know, could, when it goes into retail, could possibly pick it up there. But what's interesting are the games where they get 500 to 1,000 backers. This is much more in the typical, right? And so those people all get the game, and that's it. That's the run, you know? And then the game disappears, and all these people are talking about it, and it's really a great game, and it's a shame because if I was a designer, I don't want to sell 500 to 1,000 of a game that people love. Now, if it stinks and it bombs, it's a safe run, right? Because you made that run and nobody worried about it. But, you know, I want to see these games get out there and get a whole bunch. So, you know, some of the games that I've kickstarted, like Trick of the Rails, that game's amazing. Like, that game should be there. So we had several copies in the store that have sold through, but I don't know if it's available anymore, you know, after that. So, you know, to me, that's a really neat game. You know, so I just wish that kickstarting was actually getting this game up on the ground and then moving. But it's like a lot of these companies, they just want to get that game published to establish, check, we've made one game and we've delivered it, and here's the next game. And I understand that that safety of that, but man, like, you could take a game that sold 1,000 copies on Kickstarter and get it out there with 5,000 copies, you know, if it's really that big and you push it and you have promotion behind it, and stores can help you so much, because if every store has 5 copies of this thing and could sell them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what's sad, is it's not a Kickstarter, oh, help us print the first 1,000, you know, or help us be safe with the first 1,000 so we could print 4,000 and get them out there, and companies don't seem to push for that as often on those smaller publishing. You know, Rising Sun's going to make all that money, and then it will come to retail. They won't have those exclusives, but, you know, people will buy it on that front. But I just find it sad, all these games that, you know, all these little games that people would pick up at a store at MSRP. They wouldn't have a big issue, because if it's $15, $20, $25 on Kickstarter, and it was $20 to $30 in the store, that's something people would see and go, oh, I heard about this, and pick it up, and the company would get that many more copies out there, and it would help the store too, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, we can't even keep up with releases that are coming out outside of Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we can't carry every game in existence, excluding those ones that we couldn't even really get from from those other avenues, you know? And it's just, it's tough. I guess another thing that is a little frustrating from the retailer side of things, we'll be excited about something coming out, and we'll have something on pre-order, you know, whatever game. And then a lot of times, people with Kickstarter, like people that went on there, will get it early. And that's totally fine. Like, I'm happy. Yeah. That's a perk of doing that with Kickstarter. But, you know, they'll get it in the store, they'll play it, and then by the time we get it as a store, it's kind of 50-50. Like, some kind of take that hype and run with it, and more people are excited for it. And then the other half are like, oh, that's all right. That's a has-been sort of game, you know.
Yeah.
And people are done talking about it or looking at it or even playing it. So, you know, it kind of goes either way. Sometimes it's much better with Kickstarter, and sometimes it's, you know, much worse. But I guess that's the nature of anything. Like, any sort of brick and mortar, like, we're going to be bringing stuff in with the hopes that it gains traction somewhere. And for whatever reason, like, you know, who knows the inner workings of, like, why something like Terraforming Mars just, like, hit the ground running, whereas something else that's, like, you know, up in that echelon of of quality, like, just didn't have that same traction. Or just maybe, like, I don't know. There are just so many different factors that go into something selling that it's tough to, like, add that other variable in there with Kickstarter.
Yeah. No, and the positive end for Kickstarter in terms of retail, I think that they can help to build that hype.
Yeah.
So it can be really good in terms of, so I think of, like, I'm looking on your list here, and Vast Crystal Caverns is coming out. So this is one that, you know, went on Kickstarter, and then they had 500 copies at Gen Con, and I picked one of those up, and then, you know, they sold out whatever the rest of their print was, but then they immediately started a Kickstarter, put it out again, and then that's going to come to retail, because that second print run, which was immediate, which I think is fine, right? You took the safety of the first one, but immediately went to another one, which is what Gloomhaven is doing. Mm-hmm. But I would hope, you know, in the second print for Gloomhaven, they print enough that they're going to get those out to retail, so those can be available for people. And that makes sense to me. You know, that's a safety net, but then immediately jumping on it, and I think that's key. But I think you can build that hype, so now people are hearing about this game, so then when it does come out, Scythe was like this. You know, everybody was ready. A lot of people saw Scythe, but they weren't sure if they want to jump on it. Then when it came out, and people were like, oh my gosh, Scythe is amazing, you know. And, you know, Jamie Stegmaier's done a great job, you know, making his company, making Kickstarter, although now he's announcing that he's not going to be on Kickstarter anymore because of all the frustrations. That's a separate issue we're not going to get into because we're talking about retail, not publishers on there and the expectations. But that's their own thing.
But I think that's kind of what we're hoping to see. We're hoping, like, you know, and like outside of the retail aspect of things, I think it's nice to see from the community just that, like, that companies can go on there, they can build their brand, and then kind of almost graduate from something like that,
right?
Or even take it that next step up. Like, a lot of companies will use it in a pre-order sort of way, where it's like, okay, we want to make sure that we're actually, you know, going to be putting something to market that's going to sell.
Yeah.
And then our bulk of what we're looking to sell will be in this other venue. Like, that's totally fine too, but it's like, it's nice to see where it's not hinging on that one run on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, we didn't make our goal, so we can't produce this game that we want to get to you guys.
Right.
So,
well, even like Renegade Games, they started by putting a game or two up on Kickstarter, but now they don't even do Kickstarter.
They had been doing some Kickstarter.
Yeah. That Potion game, that was a Kickstarter one.
Apotheca, is that
Apotheca,
the one?
Yep. The very early games they had were, and then, you know, they immediately jumped in, and I mean, they just hit the ground running, right? And they've been great. They support demos. I mean, we were at Toy Fair. Sarah there, she was trying to chase us down as much as we were trying to chase her down, you know, so that was just interesting in terms of that. So that was good, you know, just, so I think that's a great example, you know, in terms of that. But yeah, but I think, you know, I think Kickstarter can build that hype. People get the game. Now, when you have a nice, healthy meetup in a store like we do, and people start getting these games, and then people get to play them, and they say, ooh, I want to get that game, because, again, when you're only having 1,000 backers on a game or 500, odds are most people in a meetup don't have it, and then if they have a store they call their home, you know, that's a place they'll purchase that when it comes in, assuming there's enough available. So, I mean, it definitely can be positive in that end. All the ins and outs of Kickstarter is a whole separate podcast, and there's been other podcasts on that, so I don't think that's something we need to get into in terms of, you know, all those ins and outs, and of course the people that have just lost money, and then just how it's changed. You know, it really is amazing that, you know, it just looked like something with all the negative fallout that it would just go by the wayside, but, you know, then there's just been these big, giant Kickstarters that have done so much that just tell companies, well, why not me, you know?
And I mean, even like, but even within the store, I guess, it's just, it's tough gauging what the lifespan is going to be of, you know, any game, basically. Mm. It's just tough to gauge that. And some games just go crazy, and, you know, other games are really good, and then they just don't really have that traction. So it's, you know, I guess that's just where trying to get it, so, like, another tool in there with Kickstarter, just to get a pulse of what's going to be, you know, getting put out there. Mm. And trying to see what people are saying, you know, it's definitely helpful in that sense, because the stuff that goes crazy on Kickstarter, you know, there's still going to be people that miss out, or like someone new to the hobby after that's already been finished, like they're still going to be looking for, you know, that game that was up there that people are playing and talking about. And, you know, maybe they can't get the exact thing with all the exclusives and whatnot, but, you know, if they're playing the game and they're happy about that, then that's that's great,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, because I don't, I'm not a regular on Kickstarter, but I do know there's been at least some pushback on the whole exclusives, to where it'll be alternate art, it will be extra minis, it will be, there's more of that and less of, here's half the game, right? Here's the basic game, and then on Kickstarter you could get the exclusive half the game that makes the game, you know what I mean?
Right.
It seems like it's more like, here's alternate ways you could change your game or add another piece to it. What you don't want to end up having is that retail one that comes in the box just isn't the game. Like, there's not enough variability. It's got one play in it, but there's just not enough there to keep going. You know what I mean? I think it's a bit like Aeon's End that we played, which I know my multiplayers haven't been super popular. But, I mean, even that retail version I had has, like, five enemies to fight and, you know, eight characters you can play. So that's good. You wouldn't want it to be there's two enemies you can fight and there's four characters and just trade amongst you. That would just, you know, that would just totally defeat that game, so... Nice to have that piece. Cool. That's Kickstarter. That's Kickstarter from our front. I am excited. I'm still waiting for Fog of Love. That's like been my biggest one. And it's delayed, delayed, delayed. It was supposed to be out for Valentine's Day this year. And which I guess only a month ago. But, you know, they're hoping that they get it done in time for Essen this year. So.
Oh, wow.
So but it's... they're working hard on it. And it's a whole, like, narrative game. So they have to make, and then I think they did the classic where they just put up stretch goals of, we'll make another narrative, another narrative, another narrative, and then they had to go write all those and balance, however the balance is on that. So, yeah, hopefully by Essen time I will have my copy of that game, but I'm excited for that one. And then we can see if our true love stands the test of time.
You and Kathy.
Whoever.
Anyone. All right.
Anybody playing the game. That true love. I guess game.
Your
game,
love for game.
Our love for game stands the test of time. All right. Well, let us know what you think about Kickstarter. I guess we're particularly tailing this towards the retail end, and maybe some games you're excited that you didn't get on Kickstarter that are hoping to come to retail. And yeah, let us know all that. So you can email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. All right, a little unique for the What We Love About ... segment this week. We're going to review a game. So, spoiler, What We Love About Concordia. and Concordia is published by Rio Grande?
I think so.
Yeah. Hopefully. So, Rio Grande Games. Was it Pearl Games in Europe? Or is that Dave's? Yeah, we don't know. So, Rio Grande here. We're not sure. Here, remember, we should probably know that if we're going to do a full review. But, yeah, so we love this game, but we want to do a full thing. I think what spurred this was, multiple times I had said to you, Brian, oh, bring Concordia, we're going to play that. And we didn't, like, probably for a year straight of me telling you to bring it. And finally one day I just saw it and I said, that's it, just get it out. And people were like, oh, you sure? I have to learn it, but just start playing it. Like, I was just like, I was not going to say, you know, I was not going to take no for an answer. We were going to play this game because I knew I wanted to play it. And it was awesome. And the new people that learned it loved it and we loved it and just totally reinvigorated that. Now, what's funny here is we haven't played with significant expansions much at all. I think you've played with a little bit now, and I need to do some of that. So
yeah,
let's rewind back to the beginning. So Concordia is the classic narrative thematic game of trading in the Mediterranean. It's literally what it is, although there's other maps of trading in other places, but the original map is the Mediterranean. And you are sending your workers, traveler, colonists, colonists around the board, either by boat or by land, so you have boats and you have people that walk across the land, to trade wares and establish buildings in various countries,
buildings
regions.
Buildings or structures?
Structures. Buildings. Structured buildings. Yeah, and so the whole way this works, this is a Matt Gaetz game. Mac Gaetz. And so he's very popular for the Rondel mechanic, which is where you kind of move around, you can only select certain actions. But what Concordia did is it pulled this hand management. So it's the same kind of idea where you can choose these actions. Once you played one, you can't get that action back until you play the action in your hand that says get all the cards back. And the more cards you play, the more powerful that get all your cards back action is, because it generates money for you and it lets you hire new colonists to come onto the board. And so the more cards you play, the more money and more things you're going to get. So what you do on a turn is you play one of those cards and then you enact what you can do. So the basic cards are, there's a trading card where you can trade your resources in, and you can trade them in for money, and then you can buy other types of resources. You can explore, which is move and build. There's a different word for it. Is it architect? You can move and build. This is a poor review. So you can move and build by paying those resources to build buildings, and you can build in every spot possible that you've moved to. And the more colonists you have on the board, your movement gets higher. It's one for everyone. You can max at six on the board. So you can move faster with more people and get to more regions. So there's like resources you have to pay. So there's different types of cities based on goods they produce. So they could produce silk or wine or iron or food or bricks. Yes. And so the different cities require different things. Now what happens is, if somebody has already built a structure, building? Structure? In a city, then your monetary cost is going to increase for building that. So the more players, the more people put in there, the harder it is to build in that spot. So then other actions, there's a card row. So you can basically play a card where you can purchase those cards from the card row. So it's got a little deck building element, although it goes into your hand, not your deck. So it's really just hand management in that sense. Then there is the card that allows you to, you play it and you can basically force a region to produce goods. And so you want to pick a region where you have cities and you get bigger bonuses than other players. And so you can do that. Now, when you pick a region, you flip a tile over, you get whatever that bonus good is, and then all the cities there produce their respective goods, and anybody in those cities gets them. Eventually, people will flip a bunch of those over, and they all have coins on the backside, and somebody can flip those back over to get coins. So that gets kind of enticing, because coins kind of make the economy run. So that's what's happening. And then the last card is a diplomat, and you can copy somebody else's card. And you can just do whatever they have face up, which is nice for flexibility in terms of what you want to do. You don't get locked out. And then the cards you purchase from the row have some unique abilities on them as well, or upgraded versions of cards that you can get. So you keep going through and you play until one player has built all 15 buildings that they have, and then that will... Do you play through, or does the game end immediately?
You know, I'm not sure. Is it they trigger the end and then everyone else?
And everybody else. Yeah, they get 7 points and everybody else gets a turn. They don't get a last turn, though. Or the other condition.
The deck.
For ending the game is the deck runs out. So there's a certain deck. So that deck size changes with players. Right. So it's nice in terms of that. And then at the end of the game, what's neat is all the cards that you have in your deck tell you how you score victory points. So there's no victory points during the game. And then at the end, you play through your cards. So you start with a fixed deck, and you're going to score points for every 10 coins that you have. You're going to score points for every region that you build in. You're going to score points for every type of city that you've built in. You're going to score points for every colonist you have out on the board. And you're going to score points for possibly something else.
I was spacing out. I would help you if I remembered.
But anyway, so it's really neat. So the more cards you purchase, so you kind of have that card engine, not only do you get those upgrade abilities, but every time you purchase a card, you're increasing your victory points. And every time you build a building or get another colonist out, you're increasing your victory points. And so that's that balance of, I'm trying to achieve these things on a board, but I'm also trying to gain victory points.
Right.
In that sense, actually, and this came first, but it's kind of got that Clank feel. Like, Clank is a deck builder where you're trying to achieve something on the board. It's that same thing. You, ultimately, you just want to have these cards in your hand match up to points on the board, but that board also has that manipulative aspect of, you know, and you're interacting with other players all over the place.
Well, it's totally one of those things where you can do a lot without accomplishing a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, you can look like you're doing well, and you can keep doing all these different things, and you just, like, you can't really tell, based on the board state, like, who is actually going to be winning. Mm. You really have to be paying close attention to, like, to what cards they're picking up and really what their focuses are, you know, and maybe someone can run away with one type of cards or one type of scoring objective, whereas, you know, if everyone else is focused on stopping them from that or, you know, doing other things, it can really balance out. And as long as you're kind of getting X number of points a turn or something like that, or trying to work toward what you've got, you can really, like, it's, I don't know, it can be very close at the end of the game, even though you don't have that that tracker as it goes along.
Right.
So, I don't know, I guess that's part of the enjoyment, too. It's totally, like the confrontation stuff doesn't really feel like it's all that brutal. Like, no. you can do so much within the game. And I guess it's trying to balance out, like, okay, if I do this, I can get this number of points. If I do this other action in between, I can maximize this even better, but am I spreading it out too? Like, am I taking too long to get something that's really just, it's good, but it's not great for me, you know?
Well, you've hit on one of the most satisfying Euro game interactions, which is timing.
Yeah.
Because timing doesn't feel, like you said, brutal. Timing is, oh, one turn, like the next turn I was going to build there, and oh, you just built, and now that messed up my whole timing. But that doesn't feel rude. It's not like somebody coming in and being like, I'm going to take over your capital city, and now all your money is mine. Like,
right, that's, you can't a whole accomplish system. Anything now, because right. you're totally out. And
yeah, exactly, but it just feels like, ooh, that was good, you played faster than me, right? Mm. So it's almost like, you did well, and I did poorly in planning, but it's not, you know, it's not a direct attack. Like, oh, you ripped up that card in my hand, or you flicked my colonist across the board, and now he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's great whenever timing is in there. I mean, Orleans doesn't have a ton of interaction, but it's great on that board when you're trying to get to places before people, you know, so that's a fun, that's a fun thing. In terms,
I mean, even like, and Great Western Trail, I feel like, has a very similar sort of feel where someone can be doing so much to accomplish so little in that same sense.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, I guess that just has been enjoyable, like, trying to get to whatever we're trying to do with these games. Like, I guess Concordia is just kind of in that vein where it's fun no matter what happens. Obviously, like, it's, you're trying to, like, play optimally, you're trying to win, but it feels like you're always doing something. And it that part's fun for the, like, toward the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, like, you could either, like, you could just hop right in and someone could have never played before, and I'd imagine, like, it seems like it's enjoyable. At least it's not something where someone is completely out and they haven't learned how to do something within the system. It's just they get to see, like, what the interactions do, and I feel like that second play would be one where they can actually make those decisions based on, you know, like, on the end game scoring. You know, even partway through, I'd imagine, like, you can kind of see, okay, this is going to give me points for this and that, and, you know,
right. Yeah,
so on
yeah,
and so forth.
You start
forth.
To pick up on it. You can kind of play and then pick up.
But even still, it's like, it's a little bit overwhelming to start. You don't really know what what you want to do. But I don't, I hope that the expansion kind of gives you a little bit more too. Like, it seems like it gives you something to kind of work off of from the get go, and then it gives you a little bit more immediate ways to kind of focus what you're trying to do. You know, almost in the sense where, like, Seven Wonders with the expansions just feels completely different to me, where all of a sudden you're playing with a starting point rather than just everyone's at the same level. Whatever you start with in your first hand is kind of where you're going to go from.
Right.
You know, and I'd like to see something where it kind of works from a different point based on what you're trying to do. And then you've got to think of a different strategy, like a unique strategy each game. And still use similar tactics, but you've got to use them in a different way, you know?
Yeah, so the expansions that are out, there's another resource, which is like a wild resource, and then there's a whole bunch of boards to change up like where you move and all those kind of things, as far as we know. So we'll have to check out on those. I think where Concordia, to me, lies so well is like it is your like classic medium weight Euro.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, let's go. It's, you know, it's a 5 to 10 minute teach, you know, maybe pushes a little past that for some people. And then you just go and you're like, as you're playing, it's where you're finding out like, ooh, I got to think about this. And oh, I got to think about this. And you're kind of putting those pieces together. So it reminds me, you know, of a Castles of Burgundy. It reminds me of Covert that I've been playing recently. It reminds me of one of those other classic, like Trajan, which probably works a little bit heavier for some things. Named to Stefan Fels. You know, it falls into that category with like those, you know, not up to Agricola, where what you said, that planning, which would be fun to have more of that planning and that unique card set. But because it's just boom, 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 here's the teach, and the game is where you, you know, make all those decisions and figure everything out. I think that's what's so great. So I think if you're not typically a Euro gamer, but you play some Euros, this is a must try.
Yeah.
I think if you play some Euros, this is going to be an enjoyable game to you. If you only go for narrative and you roll dice and you read story elements and you cheer when random horrible things happen to you, this is not the game for you. But if you, you know, par into that Euro world, I think totally got to play it. And it's not even that long. I mean, I guess if you jumped into a 5-player game, you could push yourself towards like 2+ hours with like a lot of people learning. But if people aren't learning, it's definitely in like the 90-minute sweet spot.
It doesn't feel like it's long. I mean, maybe it could if someone's
only
really...
only AP so much.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess when we were playing, even there are turns here and there, but it's not like it's... the whole game is just a slog to get through. But part of it, like, it has been really cool to see this. Maybe it's just because I've played it before and I look for it when I'm, you know, or maybe it just catches my eye. Like, it's a bigger box. It's kind of unique in the, like, standard Euro sort of look. But I've seen it at a ton of different conventions or events or meetups. It just always is there. Like, it's, you know, even if it's just in someone's bag, it's there, but I've seen it at like a lot of different places. Like Total Con, I saw it like a year ago, you know, just set up and people are playing consistently. So I feel like it's just one of those ones that's like, that's always kind of in the fringes. Like it's totally worth checking out if you're, you know, inclined in anything in that way. And even if not, I mean, if you want to try it out, like it's totally worth it. It's really fun. So I don't know. I really like this game. I've liked a couple of his games before that. Like, I guess
Navigador
is one of those ones that's been around for a while. I do want to keep playing some Matt Gertz games though.
Nice. So I think I can sum up a rating. You can give your own rating, but mine here is theme not present. Like unless trading in these little, you know, items for more items is something you care about.
Is that important that there's no theme?
Theme's not there. You know, components, okay. You know, they're solid. You got a, you know, little thin cardboard sheet for your, you know, your where you house all your goods. And the little wooden meeple pieces or wooden resources are shaped like the resources, so that's good. The board art, you know, it's fine.
It's a
there's
map.
Little paths. It's a map. And there's things to go, you know. And the cards are fine. They're all readable. Graphic design is just, you know, so-so. And then there's the gameplay. And it's almost perfect.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. That's why it's a Euro game. Like, the whole game lies in the gameplay. That's where it is. You know, if you're not going to walk up to people like, do you want to go around and trade goods in the Mediterranean on a flat piece of cardboard with little wooden bits, you know, that aren't cubes, but they're bits?
Right.
I mean, that's not a selling point. It's going to be like, boy, do you really want to manage your hand and figure this out and go, oh, darn it. I mean, I think that's where AP comes in the most is, okay, I've got this decision tree coming up, but I know this turn is this card. And then the other players go, did my turn. You're like, ah, I'm at the decision tree right now because they went so fast. Because sometimes that can happen where people have already made up their mind, and you're at your so now you're APing because you thought you had everybody else's turn to figure it out. But
well, one of the biggest knocks on the game was the box art, right?
Oh, the box
art. But they're updating that with the next version, so at least that'll be good. So, I mean, if that's the biggest knock on the game, then that's a game that's doing well. Like, you know, it's a good game.
Yeah.
That's the biggest knock.
So we wanted to do this review because we had heard a new version was coming out, but we can't find any specific details. So we know it's coming, but we don't have a specific date or anything. We were hoping by the time we got to this episode, we would have some of those details. But they did update the art on the cover, so it looks a little more exciting. That lady's still there, but now she has other people with her, so that's good. And a more landscape, so it looks a little more exciting in terms of that. But yeah, to me, this is a top 25 game of all time. It's easily a 9 out of 10, if not higher. It's not a perfect 10, just because, it's just not a perfect 10, but it's a 9 out of 10. I don't know why I said no to it all those other times, because I was so happy that I finally just forced us to play it, because it really should come out like every other meetup or whatever, because it's super fun.
Yeah, it's probably top 10 for me. I need to make sure that I'm not saying that for...
Yeah, but you don't even know what your top 10
are. Yeah, but that would be on it. Pretty sure.
Along with 9 other games.
Along with 20 other games, but...
Nice. So that is Concordia from Rio Grande Games and Matt Gertz, and we highly, highly recommend you playing this game. So let us know if you're interested, because we have a copy. There you go, episode 43. What if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me. Talked about Kickstarter, talked about Concordia, talked about some Kickstarter games. Did a lot of talk in the front about the what's on your table. So that was fun. Why don't you just set us up with some of the things that are on the horizon here in the store?
Yeah, I mean, so some stuff that we even have currently. We've got Modern Masters from 2017. So if you're at all interested in Magic or... you know, even want to hop back into something like that, that's a limited print run for that set, so we've still got some in stock, so check it out. Stoneblade Entertainment is going to be doing another expansion for Ascension, I believe Gift of the Elements, so keep your eyes open for that one too. Leader Games, Vast the Crystal Caverns is actually, it was on the shelf last time I checked, so hopefully it's still there, but
nice.
Check it out, we did get that in, just one copy, but it's definitely a unique game. I know we've talked about it in the past, so have we? We mentioned it.
Maybe we didn't go fully. It would be good. Yeah, we'll have to see.
From USAopoly, we're going to be seeing some more, you know, takes on different game systems. But Munchkin X-Men, I don't know if that's out yet, but that's on the horizon. So Portal Games, we just got in Imperial Settlers Aztecs. That's a game I want to get back to the table, but. I guess when. That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Renegade Game Studios, we just got Clank, Sunken Treasures.
Nice.
So that one, you know, Clank is an awesome game. So check that one out. That's just the expansion, another board and some cards for that. So I'm looking forward to playing that game. And from Asmodee, Watson and Holmes. I don't know a whole lot about that one. I know people seem to be kind of excited about it, but
yeah, I don't know a lot about it.
And then Daily Magic Games, Quests of Valeria. So another one of the Valeria-named games with whatever elements they have in that game.
And I reviewed this a few episodes ago.
Was this the one that you have?
Okay. Yeah. And
so this is one, the one that's... What's the one... There are two others that had already been out? And then, or is this the second one in the series?
Valeria Card Kingdoms and Villages of Valeria.
And those two had been out?
Third one.
And Quests of Valeria is the one that you had been playing... recently.
And it's really good. I really like it. Lots of card comboing and stuff in there. So
nice.
Awesome. Those are the games on the horizon. Thank you so much for listening and staying with us, everybody. Next episode, I'm going to have Gary and Harrison from the local meetup and who play at the store, and they're going to talk about their trip to Florida to play for the Extra Life event. So that should be really exciting. So look for that next week. Till next time, I am your host, Brant.
I'm your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. The Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. They're going to know it's live now. No, I'll leave it. This episode was recorded on March 28, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.